Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. This week, we're bringing you a special edition of the show from CattleCon, the cattle industry's annual convention. Over 9,000 producers gathered in Nashville, Tennessee for policy meetings, educational sessions, and to see the latest technology. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. headlined the convention, marking the first time the leader of the Make America Healthy Again movement has addressed a major farm organization since joining the Trump administration. Kennedy said he eats beef once or twice a day and told cattle producers to expand their herds. He drew cheers by declaring that the administration doesn't want to import beef. The beef sector is currently one of the brightest spots in the farm economy, with success masking broad financial weakness across most commodity sectors, according to the Agriculture Department's Farm Income Forecast released Thursday. To begin the show, we asked Ethan Lane, the Senior Vice President of Government Affairs at the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, about the organization's 2026 policy priorities.
Record crowds here in Nashville, 9,000 cattle producers under one roof for a week to talk about higher cattle prices than they've seen in a generation, higher quality grades for our product than we've ever seen, demand for our product from consumers through the roof, not just here, but around the world, and a lot of conversation here about how we can continue that run, make sure that we're confronting threats like the New World Screwworm. Obviously a lot going on in that space. A lot of discussion about Secretary Rollins and the work that she and her team are doing, both to make sure that the Mexican government is meeting their obligations on their side, as well as taking steps to make sure we're prepared here in the U.S. As it makes its advance towards cattle producers here on this side of the border and other impacted folks across the spectrum. A lot of discussion about what that's going to look like and making sure she has the support her and her team need to make those quality decisions, get that help on the ground, get that facility built to manufacture another couple hundred million square foot flies a week for us. Also, a lot of focus this week on trade. Obviously, with the president's tariff agenda and a lot of those non-tariff barriers that have been such a problem for cattle producers being renegotiated, that's a real positive for our producers. Eyes on the negatives from that, right, as well. Some of the China conversation here has been pretty pointed, talking about how that continues to be a real Achilles in these trade conversations and one that we need to see resolved, hopefully, in this next year. Also, a lot of talk about the deregulatory environment. You know, this is one of those administrations where we're looking for ground to be made up on things like the Endangered Species Act, National Environmental Policy Act, delisting the gray wolf, finally, after we have producers across the country suffering massive predation issues because of that. So no matter what corner of the convention center you go to, there's somebody having a really detailed policy conversation about some of these issues affecting producers throughout the country.
Yeah, and that New World Screwworm in particular, it feels like it's been top of mind for a lot of the producers this week, and as well as cattle inventory size. U.S. cattle herd is at its smallest size since 1951, but you know, prices still remain very high. I mean, do you expect the cattle herd to begin rebuilding this year? What are you hearing from producers and folks here?
The only piece that's missing from that equation right now for producers is certainty. And that's the thing I think we're talking a lot about here is getting past this era of, you know, lurching from press release to press release and all of these sort of bots and fakers on the internet, these fake cowboys and, you know, animal rights activists, folks that are trying to influence opinions on the internet and make sure that the real cattle producers in this room have their voices heard, both by the administration and by public at large on these issues. I think that's really the top of mind for producers here that feel like sometimes they're being spoken for by people who've never fed an animal in their lives, and that's something that's very frustrating to them.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, the beef sector is really one of the brightest spots in the farm economy right now, but administration has been very focused on lowering food costs. Are you concerned that this could, you know, impact the beef sector in any way?
The fact is, people are paying at the meat case what beef costs right now because it's worth it. This is not eggs. Eggs are an essential ingredient you need for a bunch of different dishes, right? But when you need an egg, you need an egg. Beef is a choice. There are other protein choices in the grocery store. Consumers are showing up and paying those prices because that product is the highest quality they've ever seen. They like the eating experience. They enjoy the relationship they've made with the ranchers that produce it. And they like what their family does with that product around the house. So we're going to keep making it. We're going to keep being proud of what it is. And we're going to keep incentivizing herd rebuild because it gets more producers into the game. It grows this crowd here. And it ensures that we're going to have a healthy system into the future. But the price of the grocery store is driven by that consumer demand. That's not a bug, that's a feature. So we're excited about that. It's the product of decades of work here in this building. We look forward to continuing that run.
Consumer demand for beef is very high right now, and the new dietary guidelines for Americans, that new inverted food pyramid, really puts beef on top. Tell us about, you know, what do you think that could do for demand?
I think Secretary Rollins said it best when they rolled this out, right? Just eat real food. This is what we do in this building for this convention this week, is talk about the real food that our producers produce across the country. We're a supply chain that's whole muscle, right? Ground beef. We don't produce a lot of additive ingredient products in this supply chain. This is sort of a really good fit with what this administration and those dietary guidelines are seeking, which is an increase in high quality protein consumption and eating real food. It's a perfect fit, and I think it's why producers here are responding to that information and excited to finally receive some recognition for the product they produce and the science that supports how that fits into a healthy diet.
We'll be back with more Newsmakers right after this.
Farm Credit supports rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services in good times and bad. We provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural homebuyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. As cooperatives, we're locally owned and governed. We help agricultural producers feed the world. For America's farmers, Farm Credit, supporting rural communities and agriculture. Learn more today.
Think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. Joining us from CattleCon, Kevin Good with Cattle Facts shares an outlook for the cattle sector in the year ahead.
Producers generally are pretty happy, you know, obviously with record high prices for all classes of cattle and profitability at all-time high. So that's a positive. And I think from an industry standpoint, record beef demand is also extremely positive. Some of the things or concerns we hear about are obviously Mother Nature, weather. You know, a lot of areas we've been in a dry spot. Not only recently, but if you go back and think about it, we've really been in a dry cycle for 20 plus years. So that's one of the major headwinds as far as production is concerned.
The most recent USDA cattle inventory report shows that the U.S. cattle herd is at the lowest level since 1951. I mean, could the herd begin to rebuild this year in 2026?
We think it will. And obviously, Mother Nature has to cooperate, but we've got record profits. If you look at the data from last year, actually the dairy herd started to rebuild. And the dairy herd's at basically about a 20-year high. At the same time, the beef herd is slow to respond. You know, beef cow slaughter was down substantially last year, which would suggest we're starting to keep them back for one extra calf. But the problem is we're not keeping heifers up. And so basically we're going to have to see a little more heifer retention before that total number starts to tick up.
Yeah. Texas Ag Commissioner Sid Miller is calling for a heifer tax credit to bolster the U.S. cattle supply and, you know, lower beef prices. I'm curious if an incentive like that is needed to really increase the herd.
I would say less government intervention is better, typically. So if we just think about it from a big picture standpoint, you know, the headwinds we've got basically is weather and also some uncertainty. You've got a lot of producers who may be getting a little bit older, got some urban sprawl taking place. Cost of capital, and I think we've got a lot of producers that remember the last cattle cycle when prices dropped tremendously going through 2015 and 2016. I would just remind our audience that we feel like this cycle is much different. Number one, supply will increase, but at a much slower pace. Number two, demand is much better than it was the last cycle, you know, if we just think about quality and consistency of the product. And number three, the leverage component should continue to favor the cattle feeder.
Yeah. And you mentioned, you know, heifers very slowly rebuilding, but what metrics would we be watching and, you know, our producer viewers be watching to see the cattle herd really rebuilding this year?
Yeah. Well, two things to look there. On the cow side, you look at cow slaughter as a percentage, basically culling rate. Last year was 8.6% on the beef side, and that is historically a low enough rate to suggest expansion. On the other side is the heifers. You know, you look at heifers on feed as a percentage of total, heifer harvested, percentage of total, both of those remain stubbornly high. We look at heifers moving in the country, auction videos together. That number has came down, but it's still in the middle of like a 20-year range versus being at the high end of the range. You go back and look at the last cycle, 15, 16, it was the bottom of the range. So are we starting to keep a few back? Yes, but not enough to really signify expansion.
And one of the interesting predictions your team made was, you know, in the spring, the Mexican border reopening for cattle transport. You know, I'm curious how you came up with that conclusion and, you know, just the impact that would really have on the market.
That's a good question. And really where we're landing right now, and obviously it's fluid. There is a fly plant in Mexico that refitting that was for fruit flies. They're moving that to screwworm. The timing, at least the advertised timing, is late spring to summer. So the premises, that's an extra 100 million flies. Will that be enough? Long term, it probably isn't. But at the same time, is that enough of an excuse to go ahead and reopen the border? So we'll see. I think the premise that it'll open at some point in 26 and that creates bigger supply in 27 is accurate. Timing, obviously, will be fluid.
Yeah. 2026 could shape up to be a very big year with everything that we mentioned, but I mean, what's your outlook for the new year and for our producer viewers? I mean, what should they be watching?
Yeah, no, I think a couple keys in here to me is just think about the fundamentals going forward, at least for the first half of the year, very similar to what we experienced through the bulk of 2025. So values should stay very elevated in here until two things happen. One, the border reopens, obviously psychologically, that's a downer, as well as increased supply of feeders and calves. And then number two, just thinking about the margin operators, feed yards in particular, they're buying a lot of high break-evens. And so as we get into the second quarter, third quarter, 240, 260 break-evens, cattle start to lose money. Obviously, they start to pull back on their purchase price.
We'll be back with more from CattleCon right after the break.
Don't miss the must-attend ag policy event of the year. Register now for the 2026 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. Hear directly from the leaders shaping the future of agriculture as they explore innovative ideas to strengthen rural economies and guide policy decisions for the year ahead and beyond. The summit takes place March 23rd at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., with a virtual option available. View the agenda and register today at agripulse.com under the Events tab.
I was kind of known as the sheep guy around here. Fire went from north to south and it blew that way and it went straight down the house. Lost all of our sheep literally a week before we were to start lambing. And I was really in a bad place. I happened to notice this farm state of mind piece of paper. And I picked up my cell phone and I made a phone call, and that was the best phone call in my life. I'm glad that I'm still here. So don't do something permanent over a temporary situation.
Welcome back. New World Screwworm has been a top concern for beef producers at CattleCon. We asked Steve Boren with Barron & Ingelheim about the concerns he's hearing about the pest.
I mean, from the producer side of the business, there's a lot of concerns about New World Screwworms, especially those producers that are down in the state of Texas and closer to the Mexican border. And I can extend that really to New Mexico and Arizona as well. So a lot of concern, some anxiety around it. Of course, it's a very, very sensitive topic, and it's a very difficult biologic threat for us to control.
Yeah, very few producers are old enough to really remember the last screwworm outbreak, but you know, do you think that producers are really appreciating the threat for what it is and what it could be if it reaches the U.S.?
Well, thank you for noticing my gray hair. And I do know people that had to deal with screwworms in the past. It is a really difficult biologic threat, as you can imagine, because of the way that the worms interact with the animals, it's really devastating. And there are folks that are out there that got a little bit of age on them that had firsthand experience with that back in the 70s. And so those folks are deeply concerned. But a lot of the more recent generations, you know, don't have that experience, but have only heard about it and maybe read about it in books.
Yeah, you spoke at our Kansas City event last fall, and you know, I remember hearing you mention there, you know, the impact of what this could cause, but something, you know, as small as a wound of a tick bite could an animal, you know, the screwworms could burrow in that within an animal.
I mean, absolutely. Any mammal that has a skin intrusion that is opened up, those flies can gain access. You know, a tick bite, navel myiasis is one, other injuries or mechanical injuries, but anything that might be bleeding or opening on an animal is going to be a problem.
Yeah, and the administration has been vocal on this. They've introduced a grand challenge to solicit other ideas, but do you think the administration is doing enough to really prevent this from even entering the U.S.?
Well, I can't say enough about the administration at this point. You've mentioned a couple things that have already happened. There is another $100 million that's been pledged for novel ideas around control of the New World screwworms. They're doing everything we can. There's a $750 million commitment to build facilities to produce feral flies. We have a tight timeline for those that are looking for grants to be able to participate in the grand challenge, and we're hoping and looking for novel ideas about how to get our hands around it and deal with that threat before it comes in the United States.
Yeah, and just one of the examples of simulations occurring, but the White House recently held somewhat of a simulation on New World screwworm. There have been other type tabletop exercises,
right.
But what does the administration learn from that, and some of these other even industry groups and producers learn from these simulations to be prepared?
Those are super valuable exercises. During the tabletop discussions, they typically talk about how would we mobilize if we have a threat from a foreign animal disease or a biologic threat like the screwworm, making sure that product is available, whether it's conditionally approved or emergency use authorization. And there's just a lot of mechanics that have to happen when we have that type of threat that doesn't exist today because it's not endemic in the country, so we're not used to dealing with it. So all of the agencies that were involved, I think, really are doing a heavy lift here to try to make things happen in a really short time window so that we are as prepared as we possibly can be.
The administration's actions so far have really underscored the need for collaboration with the private sector. How is your team and the industry in general really preparing for the threat?
Well, as those things develop, it's really a private sector, public sector. So a lot of the people that would apply for grants would be based in the university systems where they do parasite control. But companies like ours that manufacture and one of the leading parasiticide companies, we're working with those collaborators to find the right opportunities to provide the best products and tools that we can, as well as the mechanisms to make that happen in the threat that we do have an outbreak so that we can deal with at least the treatment and prevention protocols that we can put in place.
Steve, we have a lot of producers listening to the program. What's your message to them as they're hearing about this threat and what they should be thinking about to maybe even prepare in their own operations?
I would just tell them that, look, we're doing everything we possibly can. It takes time. The federal government's supported. We're putting money and resources and people's time behind it. The universities, the private sector, the public sector, there's a tremendous effort underway, but it's a threat that we just don't have a lot of immediate cures for in the meantime should it come across the border. The best thing we can do is prevention and stop it from coming to the United States. I know, and with my own family, people are worried about it. I'm super empathetic to that situation. There's a lot of anxiety out there. I wish I could say, try to stay as calm as you can. We'll bring tools as quickly as we possibly can, but it may be a threat we have to deal with.
We'll be back with more newsmakers right after this.
Think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you Yes. asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back. CattleCon brings together all sectors of the cattle industry, from producers to industry stakeholders. I spoke with Kansas rancher Brandy Buzzard about the impact of attending the event for her operation.
Well, I'm really excited to be here in Nashville at CattleCon. This is a can't miss event for me. There's no other place in the beef industry, the cattle industry, to gather with this many producers all in one place to hear about policy issues that are happening, about checkoff work, about beef research, about issues that are affecting cattle producers, market talks, hear from cattle chat, talk with vendors here in the trade show and make decisions about equipment and nutrition for the coming year. This is a must-be place for me. And overall, I think the spirits are high in the beef industry. Like, we're having the highest prices for calf, the highest calf prices we've seen in like 70 years, all right? So wonderful opportunity here for producers. I'm hearing lots of great things about profitability opportunities. So I think overall the general consensus and the feeling is that is a very positive one.
Yeah, I mean, the beef sector is one of the real bright spots in the farm economy right now. And your family, from my understanding, farms and ranches in Kansas. Can you tell us about your operation and, you know, some of the challenges that you face there and your operation?
Right. So my name is Brandy Buzzer. My husband and I, Hyatt, own High Bar Cattle Company in Greeley, Kansas. We are a purebred Gelvie and Balancer operation. So we sell purebred Gelvie and Balancer bulls. We also do stockers occasionally and sell quite a bit of freezer beef. And for us, some of the challenges in our particular area, because we don't farm, we lease and own total about 30 acres of farm ground, and we have that custom planted for silage corn, custom chopped, like we are not farmers. But for us as ranchers, some of our biggest challenges in our area are drought, obviously. Like, it seems, you know, like July and August is always gonna be hot and dry. This year we were fortunate to have a little bit of moisture during that time, but as a rule, my area of the state is gonna be in a drought, you know, from basically June through late September. The converse challenge of that is that I live in a floodplain, so when it does rain, a lot of those spring rains, the big downpours, we can have our pens flood out. We have to deal with mud. I live in fescue country, so when it's like muddy and they're in that fescue a lot, we can sometimes have to deal with foot rot. So regardless of what area you live in, you're going to have challenges in the beef industry. So for us, it's just managing best what we can do.
And, you know, we're looking at the most recent USDA cattle inventory report, and it shows that the U.S. cattle herd is the lowest since 1951. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been a long time since it's been this low. I mean, as a producer, when you see that number, you know, how are you making decisions on your operation?
Well, as a seed stock producer, we still benefit from high calf prices, but we're kind of a layer removed from it because we're not really selling calves, you know, on the grid or in a barn or to an order buyer or anything like that. But we are still we're obviously still gaining benefit from a higher calf prices and a higher cattle market. For us, we're kind of at our stable level of cows of what our land can manage. So we're always retaining heifers, like a certain amount of them to build the herd, but we're gonna be more selective with now our genetics of like which cows are gonna stay and maybe which ones are lacking a bit in their efficiency and need to move on. And so we will be selling some then for that, but we've been retaining heifers for the last few years just because we want to maintain our herd size, not really to like, not in an effort to build our herd anymore, but basically as an act of retaining that herd size. Anything that is a commercial calf on our operation, like if it didn't take an embryo or it, something like that, that goes into our freezer beef pen. So we're not really selling a lot of things, you know, like a potload of calves or anything like that.
Yeah, when you talk about freezer beef, consumer demand for beef is at a 40-year high right now as well. I mean, tell us a little bit about the freezer beef and, you know, probably an additional income stream for your operation.
Yeah, it's been really nice having the freezer beef side of the business. We used to, like in 2019 and 2018, we would maybe have like a heifer that was open. We put her in the freezer beef, like in the feeder pen, and then we'd butcher her and like our family, we'd give a family a quarter and we'd have a quarter and maybe I'd sell the other half or something. In 2020, COVID-19 hit, people were, you know, grocery store shelves were empty, people were trying to get a better connection to their local rancher. And so we decided we're going to expand this business. So I called the two butchers closest to me and I got as many butcher appointments as I could get. And from there, we went from feeding out about 2 or 3 head a year to I'll market between 25 and 30 head of freezer beef this year. So we have a wonderful customer base. We have tons and tons of repeat customers because they like that, you know, we've built that trust and that relationship. They like that they know us and can ask questions. If someone wants to come to, we've had people that buy freezer beef from us that come to the ranch and have seen the ranch. So, but it has been a nice side income, you know, to boost those calves that, like, if an embryo calf didn't take and you've just got a commercial calf there in, you know, like 2021, it was not as profitable for that calf as it would be now. So, but it's still a nice avenue for that calf.
We'll be back with more from CattleCon right after the break.
Don't miss the must-attend Ag Policy event of the year. Register now for the 2026 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. Hear directly from the leaders shaping the future of agriculture as they explore innovative ideas to strengthen rural economies and guide policy decisions for the year ahead and beyond. The summit takes place March 23rd at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., with a virtual option available. View the agenda and register today at agripulse.com under the Events tab.
I was kind of known as the sheep guy around here. Fire went from north to south and it blew that way and it went straight down the house. Lost all of our sheep literally a week before we were to start lambing. And I was really in a bad place. I happened to notice this farm state of mind piece of paper. And I picked up my cell phone and I made a phone call, and that was the best phone call in my life. I'm glad that I'm still here. So don't do something permanent over a temporary situation.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Both the House and Senate will be in session next week. And be sure to mark your calendars and register for the AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit on March 23rd in Washington. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.